Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got it.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, our World Series of Poker 2010 preview. Just over 2 weeks before the 57 events that make up this year's World Series of Poker begin at the Rio in Las Vegas. Jack Effel, who is the tournament director for the WSOP, will join us. Plus, Dennis, who has been there a couple of times and run deep in the last couple of main events, will have some tips for you if it's your first time going to the WSOP or maybe your first time getting into the main event this year. I will also tell you about my frustrating weekend trying to qualify for the main event. And we've got lots of other poker news, including the sunglasses controversy and the big game, the new PokerStars game show that'll be on the air on Fox next month, which you went to Las Vegas to be a part of this weekend, Dennis, but you got sick.
Well, I got to not feeling too hot, and they actually had an overload of players. A few people showed up they weren't expecting and everything. We talked it over, and I will be on the second episode they have of it on that. Instead of that, they asked if I'd do something different.
Yeah?
They wanted me to go to South America to the America's Cup.
Oh, like you did? Weren't you the captain of the team last year?
I was the captain last year, and they've asked me to captain the Americans team again this year.
Terrific.
So it's down in Lima, Peru. It's the first week of June. It'll be the eight teams that are going to be left standing at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They've been decided now. And of the eight teams and their ranking, the U.S. team is actually in first place this year.
Congratulations.
Yes.
So very nice.
Doing very, very well.
All right. So that'll be coming up in June. But let's talk about the big game, which we've been been promoting on the show for several weeks because we knew that you were going to be a part of it. And now you mentioned you'd be on a second episode. You mean you'll actually be on the second round of recording.
Correct.
That'll go on later on this summer. This is going to start airing on the Fox TV network, not on Fox Sportsnet.
Correct.
But on the Fox Television network in late night, sometime in the middle of June. So while we're out there at the World Series of Poker, we'll be able to see it. And you'll have to check your local listings across the country to find out when it's going to air where you are. But the big game is a cash game, kind of like high-stakes poker, but with the online qualifier twist that we've been talking about.
Correct. What it is, it's a $100,000 minimum buy-in.
And the pros who are playing in it, like if you had played this weekend,
correct,
it would be your own money. PokerStars
absolutely
wasn't putting it up for you.
Not a penny of it. It comes out of my pocket when you sit down there with it. But you'll be sitting down with myself or a Barry or a Daniel, whoever, on that,
mm-hmm,
probably with an amateur that wants to buy in. We have several different businessmen that have asked to participate in it and have.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be then the sixth player. That'll be the online qualifier. You go to PokerStars.net, qualify for free. You sit down, PokerStars plops $100,000 in front of you and say, have fun and play.
Mm-hmm.
Any money you make, you keep.
You keep, as long as it's over 100K.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And we should also point out the twist that pre-flop, the betting is only pot limit.
Correct, correct.
So you can't have pros putting their whole stack in there and knocking the amateurs off. And you can't have the amateur who may be desperate to make something towards the end of a session because he only keeps what he makes in six figures, and let's say he's down to 50, 60, 70,000, wants to just shove it in there to get
correct
people off of a pot and try to build up his stack. So,
but after the flop, no limit.
It goes back to no limit.
It absolutely does.
Yeah. So this will be airing five nights a week in late night, which will be very interesting. It'll be the first nightly poker show besides NBC's Poker After Dark.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the participants who were in it this weekend at the recording sessions out in Vegas at the South Point Casino Resort included Doyle Brunson, who tweeted that he played in Fox's big game. Can't reveal the results before it airs, but it will be a very good show. The set was the best I've seen. Barry Greenstein said he loved the show, but he wasn't pleased with his play. Quote, the big game was all no limit hold'em. I'm so upset over a couple of hands, I didn't sleep well. Plays I would have made when I was younger.
Ooh.
Isn't that interesting to hear from Barry?
That is very, very, because Barry was one of them. I was supposed to be at the table with Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm really wondering what went on. Wow.
What's amazing to me is Barry Greenstein admitting that he can't sleep because of a couple of plays at a poker table.
You got to realize Barry is a very intense player.
Mm-hmm.
Really proud of his game and the way he plays, and he does play above so many people and so many levels.
Uh-huh.
But if he's dissatisfied with his game, he did something totally abnormal. He is so rock solid in his play.
But
I'm really curious about this.
See, for a non-pro like me, this is great for me to hear that this is yet another way I'm as bad as a regular guy. I'm as bad as a big-name pro, and then I go home, and I can't sleep because of those same mistakes.
Yeah, I mean it's amazing. I don't know. Everybody does it, and I've done it too. You make some play, and you suddenly go, what the heck am I doing?
Have you had a situation like that where maybe it wasn't the play that knocked you out of a tournament, but it's a play that you made late in the tournament that cost you chips, and now you're going to come back for day three, day two, whatever it is,
yep.
But you're going to be short-stacked, and when you go back to your hotel room or to your house that night,
mm-hmm.
you lie down, and all you can think about is, why did I do that? Why didn't I see that he was doing this? Or when I saw it, why didn't I realize that I know that tell, or whatever it is?
You replay so many hands in your mind afterwards, and so many different ways you could have done it and different plays, and you want to go up there and just pound your head against the wall for a while going, no, why did I do this?
Yeah.
You never play perfect.
Phil Hellmuth tweeted about the big game that there was a hand that came up in the big game that was so sick I dare not talk about it ever. I guarantee it will be talked about worldwide. And then Daniel Negreanu replied to that in a tweet saying, I'll second that. One of the sickest hands ever on TV. The best poker show I've ever done today. People are going to flip when they see this.
Love it. I love it.
Now, Daniel's doing a nice job of hyping up a PokerStars product
true,
here.
True.
but still, I can't wait to see what hand it is that they're talking about.
Absolutely.
And whether or not they were actually involved in it. I don't know. We'll see. Daniel also posted something else about the big game when it came to sunglasses. And I want to talk about this and get your thoughts on this. Because it came up on High Stakes Poker a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
And you and I have talked about it off the air, but never on the air, about the wearing of sunglasses at a cash game or in a tournament. Let me read to you what Daniel wrote on his blog.
Okay,
about
well, I've actually talked about it a little bit in different interviews that I think, you know, I've actually pulled over and pulled people's hoodies off of their heads in the middle of a game and things like that. So, yeah, you know what my opinion of it is.
All right, here's one thing Daniel says. One thing I love about our show, talking about the big game, is that finally there's a rule in place where you can't hide like a chicken behind sunglasses. I swear every TV producer should ban sunglasses entirely from any televised event. They were so bad for poker on so many levels. Poker wouldn't be on TV if everyone wore hoodies and sunglasses to hide their eyes. He goes on to say, I'm so happy when I see online guys like Tom Dwan, Patrick Antonius, and Phil Galfond man up by not hiding behind shades. The majority of the best players in the world do not wear sunglasses. One of the biggest differences between live and online poker is the ability to see your opponent, eyes and all. Doyle Brunson doesn't wear shades. Phil Ivey doesn't wear shades. If anyone wants to start a petition to ban them in any form of poker, whether it's tournaments, cash games, or televised events, I'd do whatever I could to help. If you want to wear shades when you play online, go for it. But if you want to play on the PokerStars.net big game, then you just have to man up and take those silly things off. There are other key reasons why sunglasses should absolutely be banned at a poker table, but I won't get into that. Let's just say that guys like Russ Hamilton would oppose such a ban.
Ouch.
This is Daniel Negreanu talking. I heard Durr say it on High Stakes Poker last week, and he's absolutely right. You should always be uncomfortable playing high stakes poker against someone wearing sunglasses. I'm not making this up. It's a fact. Banning sunglasses helps to protect the integrity of the game against cheating. For that reason alone, they should be completely outlawed from poker. No other sport or organization would allow competitors a device that makes it easier for them to get away with cheating. Daniel Negreanu posted that on his blog this week. Your reaction?
Well, I've said all along that I would like to get rid of the hoodies, get rid of the sunglasses, get rid of all the rest of this, and just go ahead and play poker on it. I never really got into the aspect of the cheating because, frankly, I'm not that familiar with it. If I've run into it, I was unaware of it. I have read about it. Everybody talks about the possibility and the potential for it. I don't think it's very widespread, but there are special glasses. There are special ways to mark cards, just like there are in everything else for blackjack and everything. So if it eliminates that little minute percentage, why not?
Yeah. If you go online, go on YouTube, and just type in cheating poker, something like that, you will be able to find videos where people show how a normal deck of cards, face down, all you can see is the back of the cards, normally without sunglasses, they look like regular cards. Then you put on these special lenses in these sunglasses, or in contact lenses for that matter, and you can see that there are markings on there, some of them subtle, some of them blatant. I saw one display where you could actually see it was if somebody had taken some sort of fluorescent liquid or something and written with their finger on the back the number 5 and a heart next to it. And you turn it over, yeah, it's the 5 of hearts, or A-S for the ace of spades, or whatever it is. I mean, blatant, sitting there. I think when a lot of people hear this, they're going to be thinking to themselves, I need to cover my cards when I have them in front of me, not just put a chip in front of them, but actually put my hand over them to do a better job of covering them. But I wonder how you can possibly, in a world where contact lenses exist, how can you possibly defend against this and how prevalent it really is? Because even if you ban the sunglasses, people can still get contact lenses that have the ability to see whatever that is that people are putting on those cards, right?
Again, and I have no idea how prevalent it is or anything like that myself. Just not that familiar with it. Wouldn't have that clue how to get one of those glasses or anything like that. But every sport that you get involved in always has aspects, always has people trying to take advantage. I don't care if you go to a baseball with the old spitters and the different substances they used to rub on them.
Yep.
On through it. And you're always combating it. You're always trying to find some way to make the game a level playing field.
Yeah.
That's all we want.
Mm-hmm.
So if this helps in some small way, I'm all for it.
Now, I have played against some big-name pros in tournaments at the World Series and in other places where they could see what my cards were because they were so much better at the game than I was. I don't mean that they could see what my cards were, but they knew what my cards were based on my play, based on betting patterns, the same things that I try to look for when I'm playing against other people, to be able to put somebody on a hand. That is perfectly legal and ethical. If you're going beyond that, however, then there has to be some way to crack down on that and get them out of the game. And if Daniel Negreanu and Tom Dwan and Doyle Brunson and others are worried about this, and remember, they're playing in games where we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars going into a pot, then maybe it is something for the people who are playing at every level to be worried about.
Again, I don't know, but it makes me think now.
Mm-hmm.
And if Daniel's bringing it up and he's that emphatic about it, definitely needs to be looked at.
I will say one other thing about this. Sunglasses and a hood don't make you a better player. I have sat down with plenty of bad players who had the hood pulled all the way forward, plus a hat pulled down, plus sunglasses underneath the hat, and they still donked off their money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those guys, by the way, are welcome at the table anytime. All right, so the big game will be on next month. And what else do we have? In terms of TV news, you were on NBC Heads Up this weekend, the National Heads Up Championship.
Yep.
We finally got to see some of your match against Eli Elezra. The only reason we got to see it is because Doyle Brunson busted Annette Oberstad. I always want to say Annette 15. She busted out on a bad move against him when he had two pair and he called and took all of her chips.
She had an open in straight and she shoved with it.
On the turn.
On the turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to give her credit, when Doyle called and almost insta-called, she just says, oh, you've got two pair.
Yes.
She read it.
Yep.
And with one pair, it would have been very difficult to call there.
Yeah. Doyle immediately said, we could have done that on the flop, you know.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Anyway, once they left the feature table, you got put on there with Eli Elezra. Now, we had a great conversation with Eli last year out at the series where he talked to us about playing in Bobby's room and playing on high-stakes poker and Chinese poker with the other pros in the VIP lounge at the series last year. But what was it like for you to sit down and play heads up with this guy? I know you knew him from high-stakes poker, but what was it like to actually play him one-on-one, heads up?
That's the first time we played heads up. I got a lot of respect for Eli. He's one of the class acts out there. People don't know him as well as maybe some of the others. A great ambassador, somebody that'll go out of his way to help other people on it. Somebody you can trust totally on it. And he's played for years and years, and he is one of the kingpins of some of the cash games out there. There's no doubt about it.
Yep.
Honestly, didn't know for sure what. And Eli sat down, and we started talking. He says, well, we'll find out who wins the races today. And, you know, we were joking and everything. And I switched my game a little bit against him for some of that reason. Tough player. Turned out, just because of some of the cards and some of the play in that, one of the easier matches that I had out there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, nothing against Eli. There's no doubt about that. But
does he talk a lot at the table?
He's friendly talk. Yeah, that's what makes it so nice. He's not one of the guys that just sit there and all stoic, and he's not one of them that tries to, you know, be flamboyant or anything. He just wants to talk.
When you're in a
wants to have a good time.
All right, when you're in a situation like that, do you like to talk?
I like to do whatever the other guy doesn't want to do.
What do you mean?
If he wants to sit there and stoic and everything, I want to bring him out. I want to start talking to him. I want to make him feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
If he's being flamboyant and back and forth and everything like that, I may turn stoic
mm-hmm.
and not say much of anything
mm-hmm.
so that he's suddenly has to quiet down.
So what you're trying to do is take them out of their comfort zone. So a Chris Ferguson, who is, I mean, is anybody more stoic at a poker table than Jesus? Probably not. Yeah, he's the kind of guy you probably want to talk to a lot and try to engage him and get him out of that shell.
Anything you can do to get a small advantage, because I'm telling you, there's heads up is so hard to play.
Mm-hmm.
You want any advantage you can get, mm-hmm. whatever it happens to be. Playing your button, playing your stack, playing whatever. And if you can get them out of their comfort zone a little bit, if you sense maybe they're a little uncomfortable because of the camera, if you sense maybe they don't want to talk about it, yeah, whatever it happens to be, maybe they, you know, had got really lucky the round beforehand. So you immediately bring up that and start talking about the hands and how lucky he got and how could you push in with those five, six offsuit or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Now, when I watched it, I watched it on Hulu today, as a matter of fact, because I didn't see it this weekend because it was preempted again locally here in St. Louis by Cardinal Baseball. You can find NBC Heads Up and a lot of other poker shows on Hulu.com, H-U-L-U.com, and you can watch the whole thing there. I know that these shows are heavily edited. I'm wondering if you're actually playing as quickly as it seems on TV in a hand. It doesn't seem like anybody really thinks or tanks for more than about 3 seconds before making a decision.
No, they absolutely cut that out for the television and everything. And I have to admit, they moved us to the center table. And the first hand they showed with Ellie and I was when I had the 7-4 diamonds. And I raised pre-flop. It flopped two aces. I made another bet out there. And he threw it away. And I says, yeah, that was a good flop for me.
Yeah,
well, you know. It was a good flop because there was nothing out there.
Yeah.
He, as long as he didn't have an ace,
you were okay.
History.
Yeah.
So
what percentage of hands are you playing in a match like that? And not necessarily the one against Ellie, but you're going to go on. Next week we'll see the one you played against Doyle. Last week we saw the one you played against Chris. What percentage of hands are you playing in a heads-up match like this?
Actually, you're playing a huge percent, especially when you're in the advantage position on it, to where you're going to be the button, where you're going to be the last to act on it. I probably play at least 70% of the hands in that position,
mm-hmm.
maybe even 75.
And if you're, because the small blind is on the button and that
Correct.
Person gets to act first, two questions. One, if you're on the button and thus in the small blind and have to mm-hmm. act first pre-flop, how often are you raising? And secondly, if you're the large blind and you're playing against somebody who's raising a lot, how often are you calling with any two cards just because heads-up poker is so different?
You're playing a lot of hands you wouldn't play any other way. If you figure an average or a starting hand is a queen eight, well, you know, anything that's a queen eight or better, you're going to be playing. You're going to be playing any kind of suited connectors. You're going to be playing just a wide range of hands. If you're on the button, you're going to be raising with a large number of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you're going to have the advantage flop, turn, and river
mm-hmm.
on the thing. So, and you know, you miss, you know, 70, 80% of the flops. Therefore, you want to be the person that's making the continuation bet
mm-hmm.
on that.
And that's where the aggression comes in and also knowing the other person and
yes.
watching how
yes.
they play. And also stack size.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Once you get an advantage where you're putting him against the wall a little bit, the one thing about the heads up is the levels went up fairly quickly. You may be starting with 20,000 in chips, but when they're going up that rapidly, you know, within an hour, one of the two of you short stacked.
When we come back from a break, we're going to talk about some things you should know if you're going out to play in the World Series of Poker, which, as I mentioned, starts just over 2 weeks from now at the Rio in Las Vegas. And then later on, Jack Effel, the tournament director of the WSOP, will join us. This portion of our show is brought to you by PokerStars.net, where you could be playing online today or tomorrow with Dennis in the Spring Championship of Online Poker, also known as The Scoop. How have you been doing in The Scoop, by the way?
I've played five events there. I've cashed in two of them.
Okay.
So I'm a little ahead right now. We'll see what it is. I'm going to play some more.
You're not just playing No Limit Hold'em, though, right?
No, I'm not. I'm playing a variety of hands, a variety of different games. There's a Deuce to Seven going on today. There was a PLO going on. There's a Raz coming up a little later. There are some limit games to it. So a wide variety of draw games, limit games, and no limit.
To get into any of these, all you need to do is go to PokerStars.net, download the software, and you're on there and you're playing for free. And in addition to playing in The Scoop, and there are plenty more events before the main event comes up this Sunday.
Oh, absolutely.
I think there's at least three events a day.
Oh, there's at least six events a day.
Wow.
So, yes.
In addition to that, you can also qualify for all sorts of events. Have they started the qualifiers for the main event of the World Series of Poker yet?
They're going to be starting those very quickly. A lot of things they've got going on right now. They've got the America's Cup that they just finished up that I talked about there. They've got the Ladies Poker Club now that they've got going on. It's just unbelievable.
Probably qualifiers for the LAPT, which you mentioned, the Latin American
Absolutely.
Poker Tour.
Absolutely. The NAPT, there's qualifiers for that for the next coming events there. The Dream Team Australia we mentioned about 3 weeks ago, that's still going on.
Wow.
To go down there to Australia and travel around for a year playing poker. At PokerStars expense.
Mm-hmm.
The things you can do here are endless. Pick a place in the world. There's probably poker going on there. It's amazing.
Yeah. Go to PokerStars.net. Download that software. Support them because they support us at the final table. I'm Paul Harris with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. Back in a moment on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. And our podcast available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harrah's on 590 The Fan KFNS.
A quick reminder about our Final Table merchandise. We've got shirts, we've got sweatshirts, we've got hats. They're available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. You just click on the shop button, and we just discovered that we've got about a dozen or maybe 15 or 16 shirts that we did for the World Series of Poker circuit event here in St. Louis.
Yep.
That say St. Louis, April 2010, and they've got the arch. We've got those T-shirts in red and in white, and we're moving them out, and I'm going to just mention this on today's show, and we tweeted about it on both of our Twitter accounts earlier today. True limited edition shirts, because once they're done, we're never going to print them again, and we're selling for $10 a piece. $10 for a beautiful Final Table T-shirt. You can get it right now by going to thechipleader.com, click on the shop button, and you can buy that and the rest of our merchandise as well. This weekend I was here at Harrah's St. Louis playing in the World Series of Poker qualifiers. It's a two-level shootout where you win your table and then you go on to the final table. Obviously there are 10 first-level tables, and those 10 go to the final table, and got down to the final three before getting knocked out.
I'm familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah. This is the way, by the way, that Dennis got into the main event 2 years ago, from right
true.
Here in this room, winning one of these $200 buy-in events,
yep.
And then turning it into $4.5 million. A lot of us in St. Louis have been trying to follow his lead ever since. You will have one more shot at doing that here at Harrah's on Saturday, the 22nd. There will be qualifiers at noon and at 3 p.m. that day. And then if you win your table at either of those, you come back for the final at 6 o'clock that night. And again, the winner gets that $10,000 main event seat plus $1,000 in spending cash
yep.
as well. So come down here on Saturday, May 22nd to Harrah's St. Louis and play in the World Series of Poker room for a chance at the World Series of Poker main event. Now, here's the guy who is in charge of that entire tournament, Jack Effel, who we last saw just a few weeks ago here in St. Louis for the circuit event. Jack, it's a pleasure having you back at our final table.
Hey, glad to be back, guys. Thanks for having me on today.
So you've got 2 weeks to go. Are you nervous about this year's World Series yet? Do you get butterflies?
I'm not nervous, but I'm looking for some more time. I want to put more finishing touches on it. I'm, so many good things are happening this year. I want to continue to make it better before we even open the doors.
Well, we want to talk about some of the new events, but the big question we have for you is how are you going to avoid the problem you had with the main event last year, where on day 1D, there are 4 days where people can get in to the main event because you can't handle 6,000 or 7,000 people all in 1 day, so you break it up into 4 days. Last year, on day 1D, you had some 2,800 people show up for that day and another 500 or 600 who wanted to get in but got shut out because you were sold out. You didn't have another seat. You didn't have enough tables. You didn't have another dealer to deal them any more cards. And you had hundreds of people who were disappointed in that because they figured, I'll just get there on the last day, save myself on hotel rooms or whatever. How are you going to avoid having the overload on 1D again this year?
You know, we've actually made a few different plans this year to ensure that the days are balanced out and that we have enough capacity for everyone that wants to play the main event. I'll preface this with, no matter how much you plan and prepare for a huge event, players still have to take responsibility and get signed up as early as possible and not wait until the last minute to ensure something like that doesn't happen again. But with that said, we've also been proactive on our approach this year and how we balance the days. And what we're going to do is make sure that when any days get lopsided, that we will force players to sign up for other days to balance things out, to ensure that, you know, we're not packing everyone in on the last day. But again, you know, we encourage players to get signed up early. Pre-registration's been open since December. You can walk up to the Rio main cage now, pay your $10,000, get your seat assignment today. There's nothing stopping you other than the fact that you could be one of those guys out there that still have not recruited a backer or need that money to try to, you know, build your bankroll throughout the WSOP so you could then be able to afford to play. But, you know, from our standpoint, balancing the days, being, you know, proactive in terms of communicating to everyone, you know, encouraging everyone to sign up early, and then, you know, just forcing some people around. But again, you know, even if we have enough space to get everyone in, you have to understand that it's not only the day ones that mean something, it's the day twos. So what we've done this year is we're combining days 1A and 1C with days 1B and 1D. And those days will ensure that you have a small field and a big field and a small field and a big field based on the numbers that we've seen in the past, based on our empirical data.
Last year there were 1,100 people on 1A, 870 on 1B, and then 1,700 on 1C and 2,800 on 1D, which led to a problem when you merged A and B and C and D into the 2 days of day two, because you had a complete overflow there. But now by mixing them up the way you're talking about, A and C and B and D, that should balance things out a little bit once you get to day two. Is that the thinking?
That is true. You know, so that, I mean, that's, you know, that's really what we're looking at, is that, you know, we're going to combine those days. We're going to force some people around if necessary, and we're going to encourage everyone to sign up early. You know, we know that with our capacity this year, which, by the way, is substantial increase year over year, we're looking at 20 to 25% more tables than we've had last year, and then, you know, nearly double what we had 2 years ago. So 40% more. So, I mean, you know, you're looking at a ton of room. But remember, you only lose about 25% of the field on day ones, given that everybody only has to play four levels. So you're going to have a substantial amount of the field left over. So I've got to make sure that I can get all the players back. So when I say, you know, doing the math, figuring on, you know, 25% of the field getting knocked out, 75% returning, you know, I can only look at about, you know, 3750 between the 2 days coming back on day two. So I need to make sure that I can balance those days to ensure that we have the proper number. And what players are going to need to understand this year is that no matter, you know, when they sign up, there's always going to be that chance that they not get the day that they want, that they may have to play on a different day, because I have to balance those days so I can get everybody back in at day two and to ensure that, you know, we don't have a ton of last-minute sign-ups.
Well, I love the idea that you're doing this, and the A and C and B and D combination is absolutely perfect. As soon as I saw that, I said, somebody should have done this 5 years ago. That's perfectly done. Question for you, why only four levels on the first day? Why have you reduced that?
Well, this year, more than ever, is that, you know, we're getting more hours from our production from ESPN. So we want to ensure that, you know, there's plenty of play throughout. We also know that this is a two-week event, and there's no reason to kill the players. And we've kind of given ourselves a cushion, so in case, you know, we have a substantial amount of players over and beyond what we've seen the last couple of years. So anything over about 7,000 players, there's some wiggle room in there, and we may have to go to 5 days on each starting day, so on and so forth. But, you know, looking at the overall scheme of things, 4 days is nice and comfortable. Days 1 through 5, days 6 through 8 will be, you know, typically about 5 levels, and then down to a number really those last couple of days on days 7 and 8. But, you know, really we want players to stay rested, be focused, to be able to, you know, put their strategies together and not have to kill themselves over 2 weeks trying to play this event, because it is the World Championship of Poker, and we should allow players, you know, the best possible playing environment when they're competing for the most coveted prize and the biggest prize pool in history.
For anybody who's wondering if there's a benefit to playing on 1A or B or C or D, someone ran the numbers. Last year, 10.8% of the people on day 1A cashed. 9.6 on 1B, 9.5 on 1C, 10% on 1D. So pretty much 10% of the field, regardless of what day you play, went on to cash in the main event. And the previous year, the numbers were almost exactly the same. So don't think to yourself, well, the chances are better if I play on this day or that day. 10% of the field goes on to cash regardless of which day you start on. That being said you're prepped for over 7,000. Do you have a number in mind for this year's main event? Last year it was 64.94, Jack.
No, wait, we got an over-under bet we're going to have to go on. Are you ready to make a statement already on an over-under on this thing, Jack?
Well, you know, over and unders is like anybody else. My guess is just as good as yours, right? But based on, you know, historical data, based on what we've seen the last couple of years or the last few years, I've got to think it's going to be close. It's going to be somewhere in the 7,000 range. You know, I don't really have an all-out estimate for you or projection, but I got to say, you know, 7,000. I mean, I can go out there and say we're going to get 7,000, but again, you know, we hope, and we hope that's what it is, but well, we won't know. One thing that you guys did, I didn't cover with you guys, is that on the fact that this year we're actually starting on July 5th and we're away from the July 4th holiday, so that'll hopefully encourage some more players to sign up, you know, on those other days, A and B and C, as opposed to waiting until D. You know, last year and the years prior when we had the main event starting over the 4th of July holiday, a lot of people would try to, you know, get away from the holiday so they could spend time with their family or celebrate or whatever they like to do on that holiday. So I think moving off of that date is also going to help us and make it more attractive for players to choose some of the other days as opposed to wait until the end when it's late.
Well, I think it'll help your day 1A and 1B. People come out there for the 4th of July weekend and stay to play one of those two. Makes a natural system on that. I always wondered why we played over July 4th anyhow.
Yeah, just because of the timing of they got to get in 6 weeks and 57 events. Do you like Jack's number, 7,000? You taking the over or the under?
Oh, the over by far. I'm telling you, last year, if everybody hadn't waited till the last day, you would have broke 7,000 last year.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm thinking this year, I think you're low, Jack. I would love to make a prop bet on this one, and I'll take the over.
All right, so what do you set the number at?
About 77.
7,700?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be somewhere in between you. I'll take the over on Jack and the under on you. I think somewhere in the 7,400 range. So we'll see. We got to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk with Jack about other things besides the main event that are coming up and our changes at the 2010 World Series of Poker. Jack Effel is the tournament director of that six-week extravaganza. The show is called The Final Table. Download it from iTunes. Go to thechipleader.com for details on that, and listen to us every week here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on three continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the final table with Paul Harris from Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And we're talking with Jack Effel, who is the tournament director for the World Series of Poker. The 2010 edition starts up just over 2 weeks from today. The first event will be the Casino Employees event, then the 50K Poker Players Championship, which will be an 8-game mix. This replaces the 40K event they did last year for the 40th anniversary of the World Series, and also replaces the 50K horse event that used to be in there. Now they've expanded it from just the 5 games in horse to a total of 8 games. And then the next day is going to be another huge event. Last year it was called the 1K Stimulus Special and had over 6,000 people in it. It was so popular last year, Jack, that you've added more of these $1,000 buy-in events. What is it, 5 of them you're going to do this year?
5 or 6.
Yeah, we actually have 6 of the 1K events this year, and they're actually held every Saturday and Sunday for the first 5 weeks of the event. And then the last week, we're actually holding one on Thursday and Friday prior to the start of the main event. So, we saw a huge interest in this type of event last year with 6,012 players entering the first one, a huge prize pool, nearly $700,000 for first place. And it's, you know, very, very popular. And what we've seen typically is that players that come to the World Series of Poker play an average of 1.6 events apiece. And, you know, and the reason that they only play that many events is that their scheduling is not always in sync with what's happening at the World Series of Poker. People have lives. People have jobs. They have other responsibilities in life. So what we did this year was we offered this opportunity with a 1K every weekend. We bookend those 1K events with either a $1,500 no-limit event on Friday or Monday, and then we've also added the ladies and seniors in those groups as well to ensure that anybody coming in for a weekend could have a shot at playing a couple of events and still make it back to their natural lives. And so we're real excited about that strategy, and we hope that it gives players the opportunities they were looking for to be able to participate in more events, and while still offering, you know, the wide array of all the different mixed events and world championship events throughout the schedule.
And with the huge fields that you get for the 1K, will there be two starting days for those?
There will be. For the 1Ks?
Yes.
Yeah, there will be two starting days for every single one of them. So Saturday and Sunday every weekend, and then the last Thursday, Friday, we'll have a 2 1-day start prior to the start of the main event.
Now, I mentioned that you can go online and register for any of the World Series events at WSOP.com, but the online registration closes 2 weeks before the start of each event. So if you want to play in that first 1K event, that first Saturday or Sunday, May 29th and 30th, you've got to register online this week and get them your money so that you're all set to go out there for that first weekend. I know I'm planning on playing in that. Will you be out there playing in that too, Dennis?
It depends on my schedule when I have to go down to Peru on it. If I can, obviously I will, but I don't know if I'll be able to or not. Quick question for you, Jack. Does it look like you've seen some preliminary things. Is there a chance this first event could sell out?
I hope it does. I really do. I think that if we see what we saw last year and the fact that everybody wants to come and play the 1K, I could definitely see an increase year over year. You know, personally, I'm thinking about 10%. You know, somewhere in the 6,600 range, but I will take 6,000 and anything above. I know one thing, we have more room than we've ever had. We have the table capacity, so don't be afraid of getting shut out. You know, come on out. I mean, I can hold 7,500 players for as long as I can get them balanced between day 1A and 1B. So, you know, if you want to get a seat, you can come now. You can sign up at the Rio Cage. You don't have to sign up online. You can come over here if you're in Las Vegas, get signed up. You can send your money in online until actually, you'd want to send it in by this Friday because Saturday will actually be 2 weeks until day 1A. So you'll want to get that in pretty quick.
Is there any way that someone can sign up another person if they have their, like, reward card and all the pertinent information?
Actually, no. The player actually has to be present the first time they sign up for an event to sign the player release form and, you know, basically prove their eligibility, show that they're 21 years of age, so on and so forth. And once they've done that, then they can get signed up.
Okay, you talked about more room. I know that you're taking what used to be used as the Poker Palooza room, the showcase of all the gaming companies. That won't be there this year. You're putting tables in there instead, and you're closing down the other rooms, the smaller rooms that used to be used for satellites and mega satellites and single table sit-and-goes, right?
Well, kind of. There's going to be more stuff going on. We're actually utilizing the entire convention area this year at the Rio. So we're going to have the Grand Pavilion Room, which is going to house about 258 tables. Included in that room, we're going to house live action as well as single table satellites, which will both have their own operable cages. And players will be able to go get in their cash game, go play a satellite, the nightly and megas, and all of those things on a daily basis. You'll be able to get signed up right then and there instead of having to go to the main cage. So that'll be a nice thing that we didn't have last year. And then we'll have all of our events starting in Pavilion, rolling over into Amazon as overflow, and then all of day twos and beyond and final tables will then take place in Amazon. And then some of the $10,000 championship events and some of the other 5 o'clock events will start in Amazon as well. So it's going to be real exciting how everything works this year. I'm excited to finally have the space to give everybody everything that they want. And, you know, there's going to be other things happening down there that you're going to see. You're going to see the food move out of a tent into the Miranda Ballroom, which is the room that's adjacent to Pavilion. When you walk into the rotunda from the outside and you go to the right, it's that very first room where we had tables at last year, where many of the guys out there would remember playing the 7 o'clock nightly tournament. That room will be where the food kitchen is, the poker kitchen, as well as our retail. That will all be housed in there. And then this year we're also going to have a great sports bar that'll be in Brasilia, where we had tables last year. So there'll be a sports bar in there. We're going to run WSOP Academy. There's going to be some other cool stuff that's happening, different kinds of programming. The Sasquatch Man Cave will be in there. So we're going to really deck it out. Registration's going back to the same area that it was last year, along with total rewards right across the way. You have payouts and all of that, and diamond card registration in the same place that it was. And the media centers are expanding. You have the media center in Palma, but you have, you know, two locations in opposite sides of the room in Amazon for more media to be able to cover the events. You have a third and fourth feature final table with flop cams that'll be there. People want to come and watch their favorite player win a bracelet, and media will want to be able to cover their favorite event without being kind of in a corner and not have the room. We've kind of made that an enhanced experience this year. So I think the layout overall, because we have the entire convention center this year, is going to be better than it ever was, because now we can give everybody everything that they want.
Sweet. I can't wait to get out there, actually.
Although the bad news for you and some other high-stakes pros, Dennis, is that there won't be a VIP area anymore, so you won't be able to watch Phil Hellmuth lose hundreds of thousands of dollars at Chinese poker to Elie Lesra.
This is true. But we've got a quick question. I got a couple of them here. I don't even know where to start. I got so many. Daniel came up, and he tweeted about the Big Game, the new show that PokerStars has. We've got one different rule there. You're not allowed to wear sunglasses at the table on it. Have you got a view on that? Do you think that's something that is good or bad for the game, good or bad for TV?
Well, again, I'm kind of reviewing, you know, the whole sunglass situation and some of the things that are popping up in the press right now. And, you know, there's so many other things that you have to ban. If you ban sunglasses, people wear prescription glasses, people wear contacts, and, you know, there's so many other things. You know, I don't know if you can start checking people's eyes with x-rays to make sure they don't have anything in there where they're being able to mark and read the cards and that sort of thing. So, you know, right now, you know, the rule stands that players can wear sunglasses. But like anything else, anyone tries to use any sort of cheating advice or is caught, you know, they're going to have to pay the consequences for their actions. And we have, you know, pretty strict rules at the World Series of Poker and a very, very strict code of conduct. If you guys aren't familiar, that's inserted within our rules.
Yep. As a matter of fact, from the circuit event here, I know, having made one of the final tables, I know that once you make the money, you can't even wear headphones anymore. Will that be in effect this year?
That's correct. Once we hit the money at the World Series of Poker, all headphones and headsets must come off until completion, until the event is over. And then, you know, then they can put it back on when they start their next event.
And are you also doing the warnings where basically if a player was warned last year, it went into the system, he may have been in event one. And then if event six, it comes up again, you have a history of that. Is that going to be carried over also?
Absolutely. Everybody will start this year with a clean slate, and we'll do exactly like we did last year for bracelet events 1 through 57, that all penalties and warnings will be tracked. And when a person is issued a penalty and a warning, before we issue it, we'll call back to the center, basically the kind of the setup that we have, and we'll ask, does this person have any penalties or warnings in the system? If they do, the penalty they get today may be more severe than the penalty they got yesterday or earlier or whenever it occurred. So, yes, penalty tracking is back. We feel that it's necessary. And, you know, really, you only have a handful of guys that, you know, break the rules. You know, the rest of the field pretty much behaves and learns from other people's mistakes.
I'm going to switch things a little bit. I remember in 08, you were actually called over to my table by Brandon Cantu concerning a hand that was the guy had slid the chips out and then pulled them back. I don't know if you remember that or
not. Oh, yeah, classic moment on TV, on ESPN.
I'm just wondering, you've got the background for it. I don't know what people are aware of it. And you started out as a dealer. You worked your way up on it. You've held about every position you could on this thing. I'm not for sure where you're going to go from here because you're kind of up toward the top of the tier right now. But how often are you called to a table during the course of this.
I remember I was called to your table last year.
Yes, you were.
Yeah, you know, it all depends. We have an escalation process at the WSOP. When a supervisor goes to the table and goes to make a decision, if someone challenges that person's decision, at that point it can get escalated to the next person, the next higher person in charge, all the way up to me. That way we ensure that, you know, penalties are given appropriately and that no one is, you know, served any undue justice.
I would say
in terms of how often I'm called to the table, I make decisions every single day, usually a handful. Usually as you get further and further into the money for these big championship events, you know, the more serious decisions, the players will call on me a little more often because at that point in time they're real concerned and they don't want to hear it from anybody but the top. But for the most part, just a few a day.
Yeah, I would say if Jack Effel or Jimmy Sommerfeld gets called to your table for a decision, think of it as a Supreme Court. That's the last person you can appeal to. Once that decision is made, it's final, and you just got to suck it up.
And by the way, Jack, I think you should have just reached over and grabbed a handful of that guy's chips and handed them to me. It would have been much better. All right, no problem.
One last question for you, Jack. We hear that the Rio is up for sale. This may be your last stand in that venue, that Harrah's is looking to get rid of the Rio property, partly because they got the expense of buying up the Planet Hollywood property on the Strip and consolidating things in the center of the Strip. My question for you is, have you started scoping out Caesars for the World Series of Poker venue 2011?
The only thing that we're looking at right now is the 2010 WSOP here at the Rio, and there are no other plans or any other thoughts on any other level at this point in time. Right now, the WSOP is the home at the has its home at the Rio, and that's where we're at.
I didn't really expect an answer.
All right. Well, I do have one more very vital question for you.
Okay.
How has your weight loss gone?
You know, I've plateaued a little bit. You know, I kind of got down to a pretty decent weight, and then I gained a few pounds back, and I've just kind of stayed there. But I am exercising, not as much as I like, with all the extra work that we have getting prepared for the WSOP. But, yeah, it's a work in progress. I would say the World Series of Poker is looking a lot better than my exercise program right now.
All right, Jack, we're looking forward to seeing you. We'll be there on that first weekend, just over 2 weeks away. The 2010 World Series of Poker goes on. If you want information, you want the schedule, you want to find out how to register, go to WSOP.com. I'm really looking forward to it. I know you are.
Oh, absolutely. Every year I wait for this. I'm my feet are dancing right now wanting to get out.
And
there.
If you're a poker player, and you must be if you're listening to this show, and you've never been to the World Series of Poker, put it on your bucket list at number one.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
You've got to go and play and see. There is something unique about walking into a room and seeing thousands of people playing, sometimes in three different tournaments at the same time, and hearing the chips clattering and the people murmuring and one guy in the corner taking a really bad beat.
No, that doesn't happen out there. But, no, you look from table to table to table, and you say, I saw him on TV. I saw him on TV. Oh, I remember what he did.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Jack, we're looking forward to it. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me on today.
All right. Take care, Jack.
World Series of Poker Tournament Director Jack Effel joining us here at the final table. Now, we talked to Jack so long about so many new things
this year
that we didn't get to go through your list of things that people need to know to prepare for going to the World Series of Poker. Fortunately, we have another show next week.
There you go.
And so we will get to it on that. Also on next week's show, we will talk with both Kevin Schaffel and Bernard Lee, who we're going, because you and I are both flying to Connecticut, to Foxwoods, where we're going to play in the Mega Stack Challenge. Bernard was here for our event at the World Series of Poker Circuit event here at Harrah's. He invited us to come out there for his event because he's the spokesperson for Foxwoods, and we're doing that. They actually had the first event today, a 340 buy-in. There's another one on Thursday that we'll play in. That's a 560 buy-in, and their main event is a 1650 on Saturday. All of them starting at 11 a.m. on those days, all of them with deep stacks. I think it's 20,000 in chips, and the blinds start at 25.50, and the rounds are 50 minutes.
So it gives you time to actually play poker.
Absolutely. We are really looking forward to doing that. Also coming up next week, we'll talk with John Pappas from the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance, who we're happy to have as a sponsor of this show. Just this week, the PPA got 22 members of Congress to send off a letter to Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, asking them for a change in the regulations of the UIGEA, which is supposed to go into enforcement on June 1st. They want to have a subparagraph amending that regulation to state that the term bet or wager does not include a bet or a wager on peer-to-peer games where the outcome is determined predominantly by the skill of the players, such as poker, chess, bridge, mahjong, backgammon, etc. They also
Absolutely.
Want an exception in there for people in the horse racing business, mm-hmm. which is also covered by the UIGEA. And so they are pushing forward on this and trying to get things modified, not necessarily repealed. They can't get the extension anymore, but they're trying to do everything that they possibly can to fight for poker players' rights online.
Yeah, anything that the PPA does out there, I mean, they're doing it for you guys. If you get a chance, you need to go to the PPA.org. You need to sign up for it. It's $20, I believe, to join it.
Yep.
And I'm telling you guys, it's well worth it. They're fighting for you.
That's the PPA.org, the Poker Players Alliance. We're proud to have them as a sponsor of the Final Table. That's it for the show today from Harrah's St. Louis, where you can find out about their poker tournaments by going to harrahsstlouis.com and come enjoy the great restaurants and other things. Plus, the two members of the Doors, Ray Manzarek and Robbie Krieger, are coming to play at the Voodoo Lounge here on May 27th. You can get tickets there and details, again, at harrahsstlouis.com. For Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips, I'm Paul Harris. Thanks for downloading the show via iTunes on thechipleader.com. And thanks for listening every Tuesday at 2 to The Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.